real evils indeed of Emma's situation were the power of having rather too much her own way and a disposition to think a little too well of herself. These were the disadvantages which threatened alloy to her many enjoyments. The danger, however, was at present so unperceived that they did not by any means rank as misfortunes with her.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews some of the internet's favorite books, some of our favorite books, basically anything that your friends might be recommending you nonstop, and we tell you if it's really worth your time, especially if you're busy and you can't make time for it all. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are bringing you another classic, another Jane Austen novel. And the reason why is A, we all love it, but B, as you're listening to this, none of us are in this country right now. So yeah, so we're bringing you a classic and pre-recording one of our favorites and something we all read last year. And so we are going to talk about Jane Austen's Emma. Emma is a 20-year-old Victorian English woman who lives in a pretty nice estate and has nothing better to do than to meddle with the love lives of all the people in her small town. And so, of course, there are some misspeakings and misguided intentions that lead to lots of little confusing relationships. And it's several love stories, lots of love, but lots of meddling. So if you like little British gossip and Jane Austen, then this is the book for you.
Amazing. Do you guys have your reviews ready?
Indubitably. I don't even know if I used that correctly.
Honestly, me either.
I don't either.
Sounded good, though. Sounded good.
I feel like that's what people say whenever they're trying to make fun of large words and like fancy speak. As you can tell, we record this at night and I can't say words at the moment, but I have a review. So Amanda on Goodreads gave Emma a 1 star and she said, my interpretation of the first 60 pages of Emma. Oh, my dear, you mustn't think of falling for him. He's too crude and crass. Oh, my dear Emma, you are perfectly correct. I shan't give him another thought. Oh, my dear, that's good, because I would have to knock you flat on your arse if you were considering someone of such low birth. Yawn, I tried, but life's too short. Plus, I like him crude and crass.
At least she's honest. We like him crude and crass, too, but, you know, every once in a while, I like a little British prudery.
We're Jane Austen girlies.
Mm-hmm. We are.
Okay, I can do mine next. This is from Jamie on Goodreads, and it is a 3-star review. She says in the review that she actually rates it a 3.5, but on Goodreads it's a 3. This is Emma Woodhouse. I'm blonde, I'm skinny, I'm rich, and I'm a little bit of a bitch. I was like, yep. Mm-hmm. She goes on to say, you know, genuinely funny in parts, love the setup of the different awkward situations, loved Emma as the protagonist, but it was definitely boring in parts. Thought that was fair and also a funny intro.
That's so good.
That is Emma.
Well, I'm going to take your comment and you listen to the end of my review. They pair well together. So this is a 4.25-star review on StoryGraph. I don't know why Jane Austen is so delightful and comforting, but this was such a pleasurable book to read. This was actually my first time reading it, and I can't imagine how I would have felt if I hadn't seen a bunch of movie adaptations first and known the story. But it's charming and funny and delightfully quotable. Makes me want to go watch Clueless.
Accurate.
Yes. There are so many great quotes in Emma. There's a few that I want to read out later in the episode, but
oh yeah,
it's just because Emma is such an amazing protagonist. I feel like, you know, Lizzie from Pride and Prejudice is the more typical like feminist hero, but Emma is very 21st century material girl. Like, she translates well to current culture.
Yes, for sure. And that current culture has actually rated it 4 out of 5 on Goodreads. And a 4.2 out of 5 on Amazon, which to be fair, probably our most rated book we have read besides Pride and Prejudice, because it has been around for a long time. So there are a lot of reviews on this book. So what do y'all think? Do you agree with those reviews?
I do. I love this book. I think it's the same thing that I would say for any Victorian novel. It's a lot of talking and old-timey writing style. So know it going in, but I loved it.
Yeah, I'm pretty spot on with the reviews, I would say. I love Jane Austen and her writing style and her characters. This book is a little, like, there's a little less going on. It's a lot more just, like, gossip and manipulation. So I could see, like, it does get slow at some points. But I just love Jane Austen so much that if you are already a Jane Austen fan, this is a great book.
Yeah, I think this is her longest book, maybe besides Mansfield Park. It's definitely longer than Pride and Prejudice. So she is a talky gal, that Jane Austen, a wordy woman. So you definitely have to ease yourself into the book. But yes, I definitely agree with the reviews. It does take a little bit of dissection and understanding of the older English language, not quite the ye olde English language of Shakespeare, but still definitely they speak differently than we do now.
It's very funny, but it takes a minute to get used to the humor. So,
yeah, I would say if you've never read a kind of Victorian British classic, you probably wouldn't find it funny. But if you're used to that kind of thing and like that kind of thing, it's actually hilarious.
And I do want to say this book has been adapted into lots of movies, one of them with Anya Taylor-Joy in it, who is a current superstar. But yeah, so just to make it a little bit more relevant, I love her. And so you might be thinking about watching some movies she's in, and Emma is one of them.
Oh yeah, the most recent adaptation of Emma is so good.
Also, if you want, from my review, they mentioned Clueless. Clueless is loosely based on Emma. The character Cher is Emma. And if you love blonde ditzy girls meddling with people, Clueless is very funny. And it'll help you, know a little bit more about Jane Austen.
Anyway, so our questions, is it more plot or character driven?
Character, for sure. It's Jane
absolutely
Austen.
Absolutely character. Yep.
Emma is the plot. Emma literally makes it with her own two hands.
What a shocker.
Yeah. Despite the protest of everyone else in the book, Emma keeps making the plot.
Yep. What about, we went over this in Pride and Prejudice, but it's been a while. Other books by the author. I've actually only read Pride and Prejudice and Emma, though I own all of them. I just haven't made it through them. But I know y'all are even bigger stands than I am.
I'm at 4 out of 6. So I've read Mansfield Park, Emma, Northanger Abbey, and Pride and Prejudice.
I think Mansfield Park is the only one I haven't read. I've read all of the other ones.
Okay, well, I want to ask you guys a question then. Where does Emma fall in your scale of Jane Austen love compared to her other books?
It's in my top two. I'm really torn between Pride and Prejudice and Emma, honestly, because Pride and Prejudice is just such a good plot. Emma is just such a good character. So it's just so hard for me to decide which one I like better. On a romantic day, it's Pride and Prejudice. On a girl boss day, it's Emma.
I actually completely agree with that. My three favorite Jane Austen novels are Pride and Prejudice, Emma, and then Northanger Abbey, however you say that. And it's really hard to decide between them all. Northanger Abbey has my favorite male lead. I think maybe Pride and Prejudice, I would have to say, is the strongest overall book. I think it has the funniest supporting cast. But I think Emma's the strongest female lead. And so, yeah, it just depends on the day. Like Catherine said, it depends on my mood.
Okay, a tougher question, because I know we all like this book. The pacing.
It's so hard. And I hate to dock Jane Austen because she's so good at writing, but she a really wordy woman. And
this is a long book with not a lot happening, and you really have to appreciate Jane Austen to appreciate this book, I think.
Yes.
I agree. I actually think that's one of the reasons that Pride and Prejudice is much more read than Emma, even though I think their comparable quality is Emma just stretches on a little too long, especially for modern readers. I think it's a little bit easier to appreciate Pride and Prejudice in the modern day than Emma, which has some very, very lengthy scenes.
Well, because you can make it an argument in Pride and Prejudice that it is plot driven because the plot is throughout because it's a love story plot. Emma does not have that. Emma is purely just her
meddling,
and this small town. So you really are stuck in this one location with this one main character. So totally agree. It took me probably a week to read, if not more.
I'm sure it took me over a week to read. It's been a little while now, but we actually did this for a book club we were all in when we lived in the same town. And you have a month to read the book. And I think it took me a good amount of that time because life gets busy and this book is a brick.
Yeah, I think I'm about the same. I think it took me a week or a week and a half. If it took Catherine a week, it probably took me a week and a half, but I don't remember exactly.
What about, so we mentioned the adaptations. I have not seen the Anya Taylor-Joy one you guys mentioned yet, but I have seen Clueless. Have you seen any of the other adaptations?
I've seen Clueless. I think that's actually the only one I've seen. I'm going to look up Emma adaptations real quick just to make sure I'm not surprised by any.
Yeah. So there's a Gwyneth Paltrow version, which is my mother's favorite. It's like her favorite Jane Austen movie is, and she does not like Gwyneth Paltrow. So that's saying something. So that was in the 90s. She loved that version of it, but I love the Anya Taylor-Joy version. I think it's really been modernized in that version while still holding true to the Jane Austen themes. And I do love Clueless. I mean, who doesn't? If you grew up in the 90s and 2000s, you've got to have watched Clueless.
Well, are we ready to give our star rating, our quality rating?
Yes. I'll go first. My guess is I'm probably the lowest, and that's a 4-star. She long. She don't have a lot going on sometimes, but I love Jane Austen. I think this book is funny. Emma is not always likable, but becomes very likable in the end. And I like most of the side characters, especially Harriet. So 4 stars for me.
I will say, okay, so I'm going to caveat my star rating because it's a complicated star rating. So it's a 5 stars for me. But that is after I have read it twice now. So I had to read it for book club again. And I had read it in high school. In high school, I would have given it a 3.5. But because I had read more Jane Austen since then and had really gotten a sense for that, her nuance, her humor, her language, it made more sense on the second read through. And I could appreciate the humor a lot more as a young adult than a teenager. So it's a 5 for me now because I could understand it more.
Yeah, it's a 5 for me. we're all Jane Austen stans. I found Emma just really interesting, and it was really fascinating to watch her and watch her grow. So,
to Catherine's point, I think being in our 20s makes Emma far more relatable of a story. And yes. So I could see how just age alone would change your point of view on the book. So,
yeah, I'm always a huge believer in the idea of reading books that were required in high school when you're older. Because like I was a classic teenager who was like, I'm required to do something. I'm not going to read it. Like, I don't like it immediately. But now that I've read it outside of that required setting on my own time, I've appreciated it a lot more. And I think this book does require you to actually want to read it, not be forced to read it.
100%. It is way too long to be forced to read it. You will give up. It is too much.
Speaking of long, busy girl writings.
Oh my
breaks
gosh.
My heart, but I'm going to give it to a three. I give it a three, and a three might even be too high. It's just a lot of old timey language and it's a lot of pages. I think if you love classics, it's 110% worth it. I think if you don't love classics, it might not be the one for you.
Yeah. For a classic busy girl, it's a two. It's not a readable story with everything going on in your life. And it's not one you can pick up and put back down. Like you can, but you might miss some things and nuance. And it doesn't have like distinct features. Like there's parts, there's three parts to the story. But at the same time, the story is all kind of one continuous idea. So you really need to be, you need to be understanding and ingesting it. There's no really stopping points throughout the book. So
more meandering.
Yeah, it's a two.
I'm going to second Catherine with the two. Despite really liking this book, like you can't read it if you're super busy. And definitely if you are not into classics or have never read another similar book, I would not start with this one.
No.
So I will give it a two despite my love for Jane Austen.
I will say, I think you should read Pride and Prejudice first and then read this book, because Pride and Prejudice can be your primer into Jane Austen, because it's an easier Jane Austen read. Everyone has a basic understanding of the plot. And then going into Emma, then you have the literary sense of it.
You could even start with something like Jane Eyre, some Charlotte Bronte, because it's like very similar time period and similar writing styles, just shorter and very well known. So yeah, it's not the one to jump in. You don't want to jump off the deep end with this one.
No. But okay, I think that means we're to our spoiler alert section. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Y'all ready?
Spoiler.
So we've mentioned this several times already. Jane Austen is a wordy writer. It was the style back in the day. You get a lot of details and explanations and conversations that would just be cut out of a modern day novel. But we all still love Jane Austen. So what do you think of her writing style? And the first line of this novel is famous, as is the first line of Pride and Prejudice. So I'll just read it to give us a little primer. Emma Woodhouse, handsome, clever, and rich, with a comfortable home and happy disposition, seemed to unite some of the best blessings of existence, and had lived nearly 21 years in the world with very little to distress or vex her.
I mean, it's so good, because like, you totally, I mean, it is such a description. Like, you can totally think of a 21-year-old who thinks that they know the world, but they really, really don't. And they've never experienced any sort of challenge or conflict in their life. And they're handsome, in this case, is beautiful. And then smart, too smart for their own good, and has too much privilege or money. Like, it's a really, you get a good picture of who Emma Woodhouse is. And like, it just sets up the book so well of like, this is a story about Emma. You're going to deal with it.
Right. One of the reasons Jane Austen has survived so long is that she's so quotable and has these amazing lines that are so beautifully said. I also think this line is a really good example of her making fun of a character who she's also sort of lovingly portraying. It's, you know, Emma's the protagonist, but she has flaws. And so I just loved it. It makes me smile.
I agree. I think Jane Austen is a master of tone, and this opening sentence definitely sets the tone for what the book is going to be. And I just, if you didn't like the first sentence, then don't read. And if you did, keep reading. And that's pretty much gonna sell you on the book or not. And you're gonna like it if you like the first sentence. That's my thought.
If you've never read Jane Austen, Jane Austen in this book particularly is a master of comedy. Like, this is a comedic book. This is not your classic like Pride and Prejudice romance. And there were comedic elements to Pride and Prejudice with the pastor or preacher. But this one is pure comedy and pure like looking at humans and looking at characters and making fun of privilege and the human existence and what she existed in this like 1800s time period. Like, it is so masterful in her descriptions and the long monologues for characters she didn't like, the descriptions for the clergy members. It is so well done, but it is so winded, so wordy. Like, it could lend itself so well to a play because the monologues in this book.
But if you put it in context of the time period, this is tea. This is dripping with the kind of gossip housewives in Victorian England would have loved. And that's why it's so lengthy. They wrote long letters to each other. They read novels like this. Like, this is the tea, and the women are probably devouring it to, you know, get a little spice in their life.
Yeah. And yes. I read somewhere that Jane Austen, in an interview, I don't know if it was like an interview with a publication or whatever, she had said like she was creating this character Emma knowing that people would not like her, but she liked her. Like, it was very much so of like, fuck the world, I like Emma, you might not, but screw you. Like, I love that energy.
You're really not necessarily supposed to like her throughout. It's just she's walking chaos and it's fun.
Yeah, I think that energy, Catherine, that you're saying really comes across when you're reading, because she's meddlesome and immature and doesn't see her own flaws, but she's also smart and she does care and she really wants the best for the people in her life. And that's why she can't leave their lives alone. And so it's, as many flaws as she has, there's also redeeming characteristics that make you like her.
So part of what makes Emma so interesting is the setting of the story in Highbury, her town, which is pretty small. Not a lot happening, nothing more to do than to dabble in other people's love lives. So what do you think of the setting?
I loved it because I feel like it played even more of a part than like Pride and Prejudice. Like, it was very much a character in itself, where it's just like, because you're in this isolated small town, nowhere near a big city, people are very insular. Everyone knows everyone. And there are these degrees of privilege and rankings and money. And you're really only trapped in this area. So Emma is so smart. Despite her meddlesome, very self-centered personality, she is way too smart to be trapped in this small town. And so that's why she starts meddling in other people's lives, because it's not out of malice. It's out of love, but also wanting boredom. To do different things. Boredom.
Well, imagine unleashing Emma on like London society. Like, there's probably, you know, so many Emmas per capita and that kind of thing. Like, she's the only Emma here and the only one doing the meddling, so she kind of is in control of the story. And
so many Emmas per capita, quote of the episode.
Honestly, isn't Jane Austen an Emma?
Yes.
I mean, yes.
Absolutely. But yeah, I'll second what you guys said. It's definitely, the story can only be the story because it's in a small town and because there are these people you can't escape and everyone knows everybody else's business. And, you know, Emma gets to feel very self-important. She's a big fish in a small pond. And so it also sort of adds to her conceited and an inflated sense of self. So yeah, it was great for the story. But now we're moving on to Emma as a character. So we've mentioned it before, she does not necessarily come across as likable at first, but she's a very complicated character and she grows a lot. So what did you guys think of her at first? How did it change? And, you know, she's got kind of an interesting family dynamic going on. And what do you guys think of that?
I never loved her. I never hated her. At the beginning, I was kind of like, I don't know. But by the end, I respected her. I think Jane Austen portrays a very human character. And I I think anybody can relate to some part of Emma's story, and it made it more enjoyable to read that she was just kind of like averagely likable.
Yeah. Jane Austen has the human experience down pat. Like she really can like tone in on a person and describing that person. And like, even though this was set in the 1800s, she wrote this in the 1800s, it is still like resonating even to today. I mean, obviously there's portions that don't resonate, but it like, yeah, no one likes Emma at the beginning. If you do, maybe you need some help. Like that's, you probably shouldn't like Emma at the beginning. By the end, you have respected her decisions and her decision making, and you recognize that she is a complicated character. And that was hard to come by in that day and age, is that complicated female character. So I so appreciated that she made decisions that were wrong, and that she made immature decisions, but she matured as the book went on. And I just appreciated also like her saying like, I don't want to get married, like I'm not gonna like go toward what society wants me to be, I'm just gonna be a very smart, manipulative person.
Yeah. Yes, I did love Emma by the end. I loved her so much. I did not love her at the beginning. But the reason I loved her is that she's so real. I think also part of it was a little bit relatable, just because I feel like, not that I meddled the same way Emma does, but, you know, I think you can sometimes get that experience even in present day if you're sort of like a smart kid and you're bored with school and you're trapped in your high school with the same kids that you've grown up with. I think that this experience is still pretty relatable. And so I loved that. I love this idea of, you know, all these super intelligent Victorian women, and there were only so many things they could spend their time doing because of society at the time. And so I loved just watching her be unleashed onto her fellow society members. But her dad was definitely a very interesting character because he was like a total germaphobe, neat freak, crazy person who just loved Emma to death. And I don't know that I would say I loved her dad. I loved that they loved each other, because I think that one of Emma's redeeming characteristics is one of the reasons why she doesn't want to get married is she doesn't want to leave her father alone. And I think it's very cute how much she cares about him.
It's so interesting because like they're cyclical in nature of like, he's a germaphobe who doesn't want to be around people, so she never experiences anything outside of her very small bubble. So therefore she thinks she's the smartest person in the room and thinks she can meddle in things that are not to be meddled with, like people's love lives and their futures. And but she's also, there's a lot of love there. It's not coming from this like place of malice. Like it's very interesting. And I don't think, I mean, I didn't like the father either, but I thought he was an interesting character to create.
You're right, though. That's what's kind of redeeming about her, is he's like a pretty weak character. Mm-hmm. And you don't really like him, but she loves him more than her life. Like she is mm-hmm. so respectful of her father and takes care of him, and that is redeeming, even though he's like rather boring. But I will say, reading this mid-pandemic, I was like, yes sir, you are doing this correctly.
I did not think of that at all.
That was my first time reading it, was
yeah, like, this is the energy we need. It's March 2020, you stay away, sir.
Social distancing.
Right. I was like, yes, who needs society? You are healthy sitting next to your fire in your big old mansion.
You know, so I respect it now.
Yeah, that is hilarious. Okay, well, I see, Catherine, you've put a controversial question in the doc. Is Emma Jane Austen's most feminist main character?
First of all, I'm going to withdraw myself from this answer since I've only read two books.
Catherine? I'm going to argue in the affirmative. just because I get the argument of Elizabeth. I do get that argument. But there was still a degree of, it was a romance story. She did end up in a similar position with a higher, with a duke, with this idea of marriage and this idea of rank and society and family. And she, despite scoffing at it, did end up with that. Emma started off in privilege, and I'm going to recognize that she has an immense amount of privilege. I have said it multiple times already. Like, she's growing up in high class, and because of that privilege, she has the ability to think and the ability to take time to just read and think and be. And I think it makes her more thinking about her as a person, as a character. I'm trying to say this in words, but she is more progressive in the sense. Like, I feel like I can relate more to Emma than I can relate to an Elizabeth Bennet. I would like to relate to an Elizabeth Bennet, but I don't. Like, I relate more to Emma and her, I'm going to stay with my father. I'm going to take care of my father. I'm not really looking for a man. I'm good with like just meddling in my friends' lives. Like, she was never looking for a man. Like, she is just who she is, unlikable, privileged girl. Like, take the privilege part out of it, I think you can argue that she's the most feminist.
I see your points. I just don't agree with you, though. And her privilege is a big part of why. Because the reason Emma is able to not marry a man is because of her wealth. The reason she doesn't need to focus on marriage is because of her wealth. Because also, her father doesn't have any sons, so she will inherit the estate. Elizabeth was in a very different position, which I think is the reason Elizabeth was more practical. And I don't think that the fact that Elizabeth ended up marrying someone wealthy detracts from her as a feminist lead. I feel like Emma is not less feminist, but it is feminist in a different way. And because Elizabeth was very strong, independent, well-read, but more mature, more practical. And Emma is young and idealistic and bored. And I think the difference between them is really their upbringing. Emma had the privilege to be bored and silly, and Elizabeth didn't. So I still think that Elizabeth is the most feminist. However, I don't know that I would like genuinely in my heart believe that either one of them's more feminist. I think that they're just feminist in a different way. The reason I think Emma is still extremely feminist of a lead is because I think any portrayal of a woman who is real and authentic and genuine and smart and has all of these attributes and bad things about them that are fly in the face of stereotypes and are authentically portrayed is a feminist statement. I think that any woman who is a real character and a real person and not just a prop for, you know, quote unquote, modern American feminist ideas is a feminist character. I think now we see a lot, especially in dystopian novels, of the same recycled quote unquote feminist tropes over and over again, but those characters aren't really real women. And so what I think is so wonderful and authentic about Jane Austen is these are real women, real characters with pros and cons who are dealing in the real world. And so, yeah, that was probably a pointless debate, but we love having it.
No, I think it's fair, honestly. Like, I totally agree with your, like, I would say Elizabeth's number two on my list. I put Emma above just because of she's both well-read. I mean, she's naive to the society, to the world, but I would argue she is as well-read, if not more than Elizabeth, because she had the time to read it. It is a level of privilege. So I totally agree though. Like, it, I mean, the reason why I added this question, because I knew it was a hot topic and people debate it all the time. And I think it's worth reading both.
I do too. I think, I mean, like I said, there's just, they're so different, but they're so real, and they have such an independence and intelligence to them that it's really wonderful. It's a great depiction of women, especially considering the actual status of women in the world back in the day.
Well, if you're only going to discuss those two books, I'll be the tiebreaker.
Yes, go Caitlin.
I lean towards Casey because Elizabeth just has a more solid head on her shoulders, and like it was said, Emma is privileged enough to not have to get married, and Elizabeth like very much understands the world and how it works and the situation her family's in, and is still kind of just like doing her own thing. So both very well described valid points. You guys should like teach an English class or something, like a Brit Lit class, but I lean slightly towards Casey.
I totally understand.
I'm the Jane Austen champion.
And I will say Casey has a degree in this, so she can definitely argue it better than I can. But yeah, no, I don't think that's true.
I think you made some great points.
No, those were both very, very like bring on the debate like stage. Like, I don't know. That was good.
Yeah. I love Jane Austen. I think just period, Jane Austen is great at writing relatable female characters, and that's why she stands the test of time even to today.
Preach. Okay. On that we can agree.
Now let's talk about male characters. What did you guys think about Mr. Knightley, and did you expect him to be a love interest? I will say, if we're drawing comparisons between Pride and Prejudice in this, he has very much Mr. Darcy vibes, so I kind of saw him becoming a love interest. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought he was going to be the love interest the whole time. I mean, Jane Austen loves a grumpy sunshine dynamic. I mean, Pride and Prejudice is maybe grumpy, but this book is definitely a grumpy sunshine vibe. Don't love the age gap. That obviously, you know, doesn't translate super well. The fact that he knew her when she was a baby and then is interested in her as an adult, you know, it doesn't stand the test of time, those particular details. However, I liked him as a lead. If he had been age appropriate, I would have been, you know, fully on board. But as a modern reader, you definitely have to just decide to look past those things that are, you know, problematic in our present day.
Yes. Yeah. What was it, like 17 year age gap? And he fell in love with her when she was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And I was like, I did like him a lot, but that was super cringe.
Yeah. I forgot that like he had said he fell in love with her when she was younger, but yeah, they're of age when you marry, at least, you know, whatever.
Different time period.
Yeah, I thought they had a great dynamic together because he was more mature and like kept her in check, and like he was one of the only people she even cared about the opinion of, and like they had good back and forth. So minus the age stuff, I really liked him.
So it's a 16 year age gap.
Yeah, but Emma does, not this excuses it, but Emma does act older than her age, because she's in this position of privilege and kind of power because her dad doesn't really do anything. So she kind of acts older than she actually is, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As
a 14-year-old, did she act older than her age? I mean, no. Who knows?
No, that's super weird. Super weird.
I was like, why did they not just cut out that line? Just cut out that line where he says that he's loved her since she was like 12. Like, we don't need that.
Honestly, yeah, you could probably cut that out from Jane Austen and it would still be okay. Like, it would still translate fine and stuff like that. I mean, like, because obviously she's 21 in the books and he's 37, 38 or something like that. I can't math. It's okay at that point because, you know, they're both, you know, adults. And it's a different time period, obviously. Right.
That would be like a college graduate crushing on a middle schooler. Oh,
that's illegal.
For a good reason.
Yes. Yes. Don't do that. Mr. Knightley, though, I liked him as a character because I think he was a great foil to Emma, mm-hmm. because he, without being mansplainy and terrible, was able to just say to Emma, like, hey, stop being self-centered. What you're doing is wrong. And I didn't feel like it came from a sense of like mansplainy or privilege of like just telling her what to do. It was more of letting her find out from herself that her actions have consequences. So I appreciated that foil.
I think that's something Jane Austen does masterfully, is her love stories are not just like, oh my God, and then they were in love. Like, yes, the other person ends up perfectly completing that, the like second person, but also they challenge each other still and help each other become better. And that's how they complete each other.
That's, I mean, I completely agree with both of the things that you guys both just said. I think the reason that he won me over is you can really sense the adoration they have for each other. I mean, it's a very mutual respect. And I think that is one of, you know, we talk about the things that Jane Austen, you know, keeps her love stories relevant. I think the reason modern women still love these stories is because they're mutuals, they're peers. Despite the fact that he's older than her, there is a mutual respect for one another that is very modern in a sense. And that's really what won me over. I love their, like Catherine said, they can check each other without it being condescending or paternalistic. And so it really, I think the actual love story part still translates really well.
All right. Well, Emma's love story is not the only love story. Emma causes several other love stories and also ruins some. Everything works out in the end, but let's talk about sweet, sweet Harriet that Emma takes under her wing and decides to play matchmaker for. I love Harriet. She's just this like kind of bumbling sidekick who I think is the greatest character in the book. But what are your thoughts?
Oh, poor dumb Harriet. She was just so easily manipulated. I totally agreed with Mr. Knightley when he was just like, this is not a good idea for you to be meddling in her life. Like, don't be friends with her. Like, you are just totally controlling her. I felt so bad when she rejected the initial Mr. Martin's initial proposal because Emma told her to, essentially. Even though Emma said, like, don't just do it for me, do it for yourself. It was like, okay, you're manipulating her into not, like, no. It was a great character to write, like, kudos. Like, I think it was an amazing character in general of just how easily she could, quote unquote, fall in love and how easily she could want to appease Emma and want to appease others. Despite what she wants for herself. Like, it's an interesting character.
Yeah, the stuff with Mr. Martin was the height of the cringe in the novel. I mean, I could just feel it all over my skin when I was like, Emma, you are giving the worst, most terrible advice right now. Like, you are being so awful. But Harriet ends up growing a lot, and Emma's experiences with Harriet are really what caused her the most growth. So I was glad that was there. I mean, Harriet just did whatever Emma said, and I was like, girlfriend, you are being the blind leading the blind out here. But yeah, I thought it was a good addition to the story.
Contextually, like, a lady of higher stature takes you under her wing, you're not going to say no in that time period. But yeah, she could have been a little bit wiser. I want to raise you the height of cringe. The height of cringe is when Emma's whipping Harriet this way and that on like love stories, and then Harriet's like, actually, now I love Mr. Knightley. And Emma's like, oh, wait. And then they fall, like, they're like, wait, we're gonna get together. And Harriet's just still there, and she's like, that is cringe. I was like, oh, yes. You did her dirty so many ways.
Oh my God, I forgot that whole scene when like everything comes together and you're just watching it, like watching a slow motion train crash of like, wow, Emma convinced Harriet that she could do better and go for all these wealthy men. And then Harriet believed her. And now it's like, oh, Emma's about to steal the man she just fell in love with. It was like
Mr. Knightley was polite and danced with Harriet because she got embarrassed by the other guy. And then Harriet fell in love with him because of Emma's pushing. And then Emma's like, wait, not that one. Yeah. So weird. But that helped Emma realize her feelings. So I guess it's good.
Mm-hmm.
They all lived happily ever after at the end.
We've talked about this a few times now too. One of the biggest parts of the novel is Emma trying to play matchmaker with Harriet. How did you guys feel about that? And how did you feel about the friendship between the two?
Well, it's not the first time she plays matchmaker. She successfully matched her governess up with a widower. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, now I need a new project. And she finds Harriet. And that's kind of funny. Their friendship was really cute, despite it being very much like an awkward power dynamic, and ended up in the end teaching both of them a lot. But Emma also like is trying to matchmake with the Weston's nephew or whatever, or son. And then like the Jane Fairfax comes into play.
Oh my gosh, that whole side plot.
And there is so much going on. And she's just like, you and go here. And then everyone does the opposite. And it messes everything up in Emma's world. And really her relationship with Harriet is one of the most steady relationships, other than when she makes her really sad for a bit.
Yeah, that whole Jane Fairfax stuff, that was a whole other train wreck. This book has so many like hidden love stories. Oh, and
this book has cringy moments.
Mm-hmm,
like it's pages and pages of cringe, because like it's long-winded cringe where you're just like, oh my God, can this train wreck ever end? But also it's like you want to watch the train wreck. But I thought it was so fascinating who she kept setting Harriet up with, because all the people she kept setting Harriet up with were like not good options. Like, I'm just like, Mr. Elton, like, really, you're choosing this dim-witted preacher over like anyone else? Like, is there no other fish in the sea? But like, obviously, small town, there was another fish in the sea. So, yeah.
Oh, it was all Emma's cast-offs of men who were too high rank for Harriet, but that Emma was not interested in herself. And I was like, oh man, it caused so many problems. I mean, it's just, as a mature adult, you realize that's not a good way to determine compatibility. And that's also not a good way to keep your friendships intact. But Emma had to learn that the hard way.
Okay, so you mentioned dim-witted preacher. Pride and Prejudice also has a dim-witted preacher that gets tangled in the love triangle. Pride and Prejudice also has a pretty blonde girl named Jane.
Yeah.
So we'll throw that in there. But does Jane Austen have an issue with some preachers? Or like, what do you think about this character? They add some cringy comedy.
I almost think Jane Austen has an issue with the Church of England in general. Because reading her other books, like she doesn't outright say it, but like, you know, this day and age, they were very more backhanded in their and subtle in their critiques. It was very passive aggressive. So I think there is definitely something behind that. She was definitely saying either she was spited by a preacher or she was not really a fan of the institution of the church.
I feel like Miss Jane Austen was dancing a little close to the flame with some of her religious characters. I mean, it was very taboo at the time to criticize the church. So I don't know how this was received at the time. Obviously, there were a lot of annoying preachers in the world, or it wouldn't have been relatable. But I found that funny that she could even get away with all that.
Oh, the character was hilarious. Both books, the character was probably some of the best comedic relief.
Okay, let's circle back to now the pretty blonde girl's name, Jane. Jane Fairfax is this mysterious woman who sweeps into town to stay with her aunt, I think, who's kind of like this weird spinster that nobody really likes, but all like tolerate because she's the like town news source. And then Frank Churchill sweeps in, the like nephew of Mr. Weston. And now everybody is either like after Jane or after Frank because there's fresh meat on the dating market. So let's talk about what this adds to the story.
Well, I think the first thing is that Frank really encouraged Emma's lesser qualities. He was a gossip. He could be a bit underhanded. He would make fun of people in front of them in a way that they didn't know that he was making fun of them. And it was definitely one of Emma's more unlikable sides that would engage with that and formed a friendship with him because of that. Something we have noted is that Mr. Knightley hated him. And that was obviously, we know now, A, because he was in love with Emma, and B, just because he was not good for her. But Emma's also jealous of Jane, who's now the only other like pretty, you know, classy girl in town. And so another one of Emma's not best moments is just not getting along with Jane.
Well, and I think it's so interesting, and that's why I feel for Jane Fairfax, is because she ends up with Frank Churchill. But Frank literally like treats her like shit throughout this book in front of her because he wants to like hide their relationship.
It was enraging.
And I'm like, why would you ever continue and marry this man who treats you like shit in front of others because he thinks that you are too low of rank and will not help you in your quest, in his quest for power, riches, whatever? It's just,
he wanted to throw them off their trail, but he went so far into it that it was just inexcusable. And Emma didn't fall in love with him, but everything he did was like playing with Emma's feelings unnecessarily and shitting on Jane in public unnecessarily. And so it was a lot.
It is the one time you feel kind of bad for Emma because her own manipulative tactics get turned on her.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time you're like, you should be friends with Jane. Jane's a little saint. She's so nice. Like, you guys would get along well. And she like doesn't want to, and she's pursuing all the wrong people. And yeah, you feel kind of sad for her because she finds out that this guy that she's kind of been like bantering with is actually engaged. And it's very scandalous that they're engaged. And that's when all the chaos kind of really comes to a head. And that's the one time I felt a little bad for her.
I did too. But sort of one of our next questions is, when do you think Emma starts to have more self-awareness? I think it's two moments that I'd point to. I think one is when Harriet falls in love with
Knightley.
Mr. Knightley. I think the other is this whole ordeal with Frank and Jane. I think Emma realizes both that she was being a bitch with Frank and that she took out feelings of jealousy on Jane undeservedly. And so I think, and those two moments happen like fairly close together. And I think they sort of combine to really wake her up out of her conceited little world.
Yeah. I think the one moment in particular that I think of where she realizes her self-awareness is like at a picnic when she starts mm-hmm. making fun of Jane's mother or aunt right in front of her. And her and Frank are doing it, essentially. It's not just her, Frank. It instigates her. And then Mr. Knightley kind of calls her out on it, of like, this person has been by your side for years since you were a kid and you treat her like this. And then she's honestly sorry for it. And that's kind of the first time she's been sorry without an excuse for her actions. And so it's kind of when Mr. Knightley knocks some sense into her after Frank has goaded her into doing things that she probably wouldn't have done out loud. So that's kind of the moment I think of.
That's where both Mr. Knightley is like good for Emma, but also kind of cringe because he's kind of reprimanding her like a child, and their age difference mm-hmm. is very notable. But also when she has all these self-awareness moments, it almost brings her to the correct maturity level to be with Mr. Knightley. So I'm really torn on how he plays into that, but it definitely does bring about Emma's like development of a more mature perspective on things and about like how to interact with other people kindly.
I think that's everything. There are two Emma quotes that I want to read out because, you know, the romance in this story is sort of a background plot. So we didn't talk as much about, you know, the romance as we did in Pride and Prejudice. But there is one quote that I just loved so much, and it's when Emma's being proposed to. And he says, "If I loved you less, I might be able to talk about it more." And that just got to my heart so much. I thought it was so cute because he's just so overpowered by his feelings that he's like, "I can't make you a speech because it's just too personal, too close to my heart." My other favorite quote is, "I always deserve the best treatment because I never put up with any other," from Emma. I was
that's
like,
a good one to end on. I agree.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
Like, yes, girl. yeah. Know your worth. And yeah, so there you have it. I think that's everything.
Are our suggestions going to be other Jane Austen novels, or do you have other suggestions besides Jane Austen? Because mine's all Jane Austen.
I don't have anything else. That's probably, I can't think of anything.
Go watch Clueless. You'll understand why Emma's funny.
As if. Yeah. I mean, Northanger Abbey, Northanger Abbey is a good one from Jane Austen. It's shorter. I read it in a day, so it's more digestible.
Yeah, so, way shorter.
I'd recommend that one. But yeah. So that's kind of it. And just let y'all know, these are just our opinions. We would love to hear from y'all about the classics, because we know this is not necessarily trending on Book Talk, but it's been trending since the 1800s. And we really love these books and we really love these classics. And we'd love to hear from y'all if we inspired you to read them or if you had already read them and whether you agree or disagree. And you can find us at Busy Girls Pod on all socials. Just let us know and rate and review, please, as well.
Thanks for letting us review one of our favorite classics, a good old cozy bookstagram favorite, while we're all not in the country.
Yeah. So to be even clearer, Casey's going to Europe for a month. Mm-hmm. And then Caitlin and I are taking a trip to Patagonia. So we're going to be in completely different continents and completely different time zones in the coming
months. Different hemispheres.
Completely different hemispheres as well. Southern and northern hemispheres. So you might have seen some things on our social media about our trips. But yeah, so this is kind of what we've been doing. And yeah, I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening, and when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.